This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good Thursday to you. Thanks for joining us. This is Wake Up Call SportsMap Radio. So, Aaron Judge got home run number 61 last night, and now is tied Roger Maris. So, let the conversation begin. But you know what? It was one of those chases that always was going to be centered around perception. It was always going to be centered around how people really felt about the home run record. Was it something that people were that interested in from the standpoint of clean versus tainted? Was it something that people were interested because it was American League, National League? Was it something because we were robbed of something in the summer of 98? Whatever people feel about this home run chase, the reality of it is was there was going to be a conversation. Think about what happened on Friday when Albert Pujols hit home run number 700, and he had hit two home runs in that game against the Dodgers, and all of a sudden it was almost this feeling of, hey, this is a wonderful moment for baseball. This is a milestone. Only four players in the history of the sport have ever hit 700 home runs. He's now in this club. It's a personal record. It doesn't require any deep analysis. It doesn't require any sort of figuring out its place in history. Albert Pujols wasn't chasing a mark. He wasn't trying to set a new bar. He wasn't doing any of that. He was just a baseball player that had a long, successful career that resulted in him hitting a lot of home runs. And by hitting a lot of home runs, he put himself in a position where his chase for 700 just meant it was a chase for 700. And if you're a baseball fan, you can just sit back and enjoy that. But Aaron Judge was going to be different. Aaron Judge was chasing an American League record that, hint, hint, wink, wink, we all knew was something a little larger. It wasn't just an American League record, and everybody who was covering it knew it wasn't just an American League record. That if he gets 62, and he has 7-8 games to do that, if he gets 62, there'll be another debate about what that means in context to the record. We'll talk about that. We'll get into the NFL, including one head coach who just doesn't want to tell you anything. Have we not learned our lesson? Plus, what will happen to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Kansas City Chiefs game if they can't play it in Tampa? We got that for you as well. As we continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, it's Wake Up Call. Glad you joined us on SportsMap Radio.
Got my first real six string, bought it at the five and dime. Played it till my fingers bled. Was the summer of 69.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Throwback Thursday today. On this date in 2004, it was announced that the Montreal Expos would be leaving and become the Washington Nationals. That they would be moving to D.C. And so no more baseball in Montreal. So we decided to do Canadian singers on Throwback Thursday. And that'll be the music you'll be hearing all show this morning. How great is that? This is Bryan Adams. I'll admit, I like this song a lot. And the reason I like this song is for some whatever reason, this takes me back to like my early teenage years where life was good. I enjoyed whatever year this was. I was like 84, 85. I had a paper route. I was hanging with my buddies. I had money, like paper route money, but I had money for soda, candy, and pizza. I was enjoying life. I just thought this song was great. So every time I hear this song, I'm sort of reminded of my youth, riding around on my bike, hanging out with my friends. Again, going down to playing track and field at the local pizza parlor.
Waiting for the streetlights to come on because that's how you knew to go home.
Yeah, that's right. Playing basketball at the park.
Simple.
Simple life. You know, waking up every day like, what am I going to do today? The summer of that year, I had a paper route, and nobody helped me with the paper route in the winter. Like, nobody wanted to come do it when it was dark at 4 o'clock and I was walking around delivering papers. But in the summer, I could get like five of my buddies to ride around and help me do the papers.
Oh, yeah.
We would ride around, like, they knew all the houses that we had to deliver the papers to. So we would get it done in like 15 minutes. It was great. Like, we would just, everybody would just take papers and go their way. And because we wanted to go back to play basketball, because I had this paper out, and it took me about an hour to do every day. And you know, my buddies would all grab papers and they all head over to the cities and whatnot.
Now, I'm wondering if, I don't know if in small towns, but I mean, that job's pretty much gone now, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. It was great. My brother and I had it, and we had it as kids. And there was a couple of other people that had it, but my brother and I had two routes. Like, we each had two routes. So they gave us, I had one, and then they added another one to me if I wanted it, and I took it. My brother had the same thing. And Saturday mornings were the worst, because that was the early morning paper. The Concord Monitor came out early in the morning on Saturday. So every Saturday morning, we'd have to get up at like 5 in the morning to go do the paper route. But it was an afternoon paper. So after school, we'd go down, we'd get our papers, and we'd walk our route and drop off papers, and then we were done. Like I said, it took about an hour, but when you're like 13, it felt like it was 10 hours. Felt like it took forever.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't that long.
See, I didn't have a paper route because, you know, growing up in L.A., that was some adult's job.
Yeah, I think it is now. I don't even think kids do it anymore. I think people drive around.
But when I was, but my cousin who I grew up with, when I went back and stayed with him for a summer, he had a paper route, so we'd always do it. Yeah. And I'll never forget this one time when he was short, like two or three papers, and so we rode our bikes to the newspaper company, and they were closed.
Oh,
but outside was a newspaper stand. You know, we used to, you know, you put like in 50 cents and open the thing and grab
the thing.
A paper. And I remember opening it, and we were just about to close it because we paid for one and grabbed one. I was just about to close it. I'm like, well, wait a second.
Yeah.
You know,
grab
this
a couple more.
This is done on the honor system. So, yeah, we just grabbed a couple more.
Yeah. They don't really care.
They never cared.
They just wanted the paper to be in people's hands. Yeah, we were supposed to buy the papers, and then we could write a form and fill it. I never did. The papers were like a quarter. Like I was like, yeah, I'll just buy the paper and fill it out. But, yeah, so Bryan Adams, Summer 69, always made me feel good about what – every time I hear it, whenever I hear it on the radio.
Always.
It gets played a lot still. It always makes me feel pretty good. Anyway, Aaron Judge, speaking of feeling good, he's got 61 home runs, hit it last night against the Blue Jays. By the way, Frank Lasagna, what a cool last name, by the way. He was the fan that missed it.
That's heartbreaking.
His glove. And you saw the dejection. If you watched it, the dejection on his face is real. That is not a guy that dove for the ball, hit his glove, bounced off, and went, oh, man, oh, had it, almost had it. Oh, well. He looked like that was his chance. That was the universe and fate lining up and going, all right, you're on the stage now. Don't screw it up. And he went, oh, and he dropped it. And that was it. He had a chance to have it, whatever he was going to do with it. Maybe he would have given it back to the family for free. Maybe he would have gotten some cool things out of it. He would have been, the ball would have been in his court, no pun intended. He would have had it and whatnot, but it bounced off his glove. It lands in the bullpen. The bullpen coach, who's married to reporter Sarah Walsh, he just handed it off to security. He didn't even care. Just went,
yep,
there you go. Take it, give it to, I don't care. Take it, whatever you want to do with this.
Quick and easy.
Quick and easy it is. But as I said at the top of the hour, now the conversation is going to be started. And it's going to be started even more when he gets to 62. So they got, I think, 7 games remaining on the regular season. If he gets 62, 63, 64, whatever it is, you know, we're going to have a conversation. And here's the thing. I think there's a couple of people that kind of fall in line into this category. There are people like Roger Maris's son, right, who spoke afterwards and said, hey, listen, this is, I think he's the home run champion. If he gets to 62, he's the home run champion. And I think he's always sort of felt that way about his dad's record, that it was, that the people who passed it did it with a cloud of the steroid issue, and therefore all of it's sort of null and void. He protected his father's legacy, and rightfully so. I think all of us would be in sort of that position if our father was famous for having a mark, a record in the books, and then some people started passing it, and they did so with the benefit of performance-enhancing drugs, you'd probably stand on that soapbox too. And he's still standing on that soapbox today, right? So he pointed that out, and I think there's going to be a segment of people that will kind of agree with him on that. But then there's going to be a group of people that remember, you know, 1998 was, you know, 24 years ago, 25 years ago. We're getting to that point now where it's a generation ago. So if you were alive and
and cognizant of that time, and you were engaged in the Sosa and McGuire chase in the summer of 1998, you know, maybe you feel like that moment was somewhat tainted and your childhood was taken away from you, whatever superlatives you want to use for that time. Or maybe you're from a generation that doesn't know anything about that. Maybe you were too young. Maybe you weren't born yet, whatever it may be. And everybody that's been like, Barry Bonds and Jimmy Sosa and Mark McGuire are all cheated. Maybe you're like, you know what? It's not my problem. That's not my generation. I wasn't caught up in that. I was born one day and I looked up at the, you know, when I got into baseball when I was a kid and I started looking at stats when I was a kid, Barry Bonds had 73. So he has 73. I don't know anything about what it was like at the time. I don't know anything about the debate at the time. I just woke up one day. I was alert to baseball as a six-year-old or a seven-year-old, and Barry Bonds had the record. And if that's the case, this really is meaningless. And so I said that yesterday. I hate to say this, but this is going to be meaningless, because there is going to be a point where there is no American League and there is no National League other than just a way to separate teams and put it in some sort of context for the postseason. That's what baseball has done. It has taken two leagues that were separate, that were legitimately separate by one particular rule, the designated hitter. But there was also sort of a style of play the National League had. The American League had the DH. So there was another style of play. Remember too, that pitchers batting isn't just putting bad, you know, people in the lineup to hit baseballs, right? Where like it's an easy out batter number nine because it's a pitcher. The double switch, when to take a pitcher out, all that stuff. When is he coming in the order? All of that strategical element was part of the National League game. The American League game didn't have that. And so while these leagues were separate, there was a distinct feeling like there was a style of baseball in the National League, style of baseball in the American League. I remember arguing this with people like back in the 90s about how I preferred American League baseball because I wanted to see the best possible batting combination that you could put together with what you had on your roster. And I can remember people saying, but there's such a strategical element to National League baseball. Those are over now. Those days are gone. That's it. And there's going to be a point where you're going to wonder why there's an American League home run record and why there's a National League home run leader and why there's an American League MVP and why there's a National League MVP and an AL Cy Young Award winner and an NL Cy Young, when it doesn't matter. We don't do this in other sports. If you win the MVP in the NBA, it's not a Western Conference thing. Oh, I know they do Western Conference Player of the Week and all that stuff, but that's not it. I'm talking about the major awards. If you win the NFL MVP, it's not because you were the best in your conference. They come together. So down the road, this mark it doesn't have any relevance except your perception of it. That's really it. That's the only way this matters. It has been covered as if he is chasing a mark. And he is, depending on your point of view. He is, if you are from the old school of the American League was different from the National League and the two will settle it at the World Series. If you're from that day and age, if you're from that sort of baseball, like me, my father, my brother, all of those things, most of us at our age, then maybe it has relevance. But if you are younger than 30, you've lived in a world of interleague play. You've lived in a world where that line has been completely blurred, and it's going to get blurred now. As I was saying yesterday, Rob Manfred has decided now every Major League Baseball team will play every other Major League Baseball team that they have. That if you are a Colorado Rockies fan, you will play the Yankees. You don't play them every year, but you will now. And because of that blurring, look, NFL can't do that. I mean, the NFL, and outside of the 17 game, but before when we were under the 16 game schedule, you only played four games against the other conference. That was it. You spent most of your schedule playing in your conference, right? Six games within your division, another conference in your division, and then you in your another division in your conference, and then you would play based on position of where you finished in your conference, and then you would play these four games in a division that was set in motion. So if you were a Denver Broncos fan, you play the Cowboys once every 4 years, right? Because of the NFL schedule, that's the best way to do it. But Major League Baseball is like, we have 162 games. We can play everybody. Let's just do that. So again, that line is going to get blurred and blurred and blurred to a point where, what are we rooting for? What exactly was last night? And baseball's not going to do anything with it. You know, Darren Rovell, who covers the business of sports, you know, he showed a picture of the guy missing the ball. He said the guy missed out on millions. Well, things are valuable because what people will pay for it. You know, I got a little bull in my studio. It's just this little soft bull. I don't even know where I got it, but I think I got it at a restaurant. It's kind of cute. I just put it on my desk. If somebody wants to give me $100,000 for it, they can have it. It's not worth $100,000, but it's worth it if somebody wants to give me money for it. So if somebody wanted to give that guy $1 million for the baseball's worth $1 million. But what is it? It tied a mark that is what is Roger Maris's record in Major League Baseball history now? Seventh? Sixth? I mean, McGuire had 60-something home runs 1 year. I think Sosa's had over 60 twice. Bonds had 73. McGuire had 70. I mean, where is 61 on the list of all of singles, tainted or not tainted? He just tied for like sixth all time. He's like five away from tying for third for Sammy Sosa at 66. Now, again, if your perception is, well, all of that's tainted, then that has value. If your version is, I don't know, I don't care, I wasn't around, then it has no value. It's just another home run record that's a nice number because it's something historic. But what value does it have? It's all about perception. All right, we'll get back to this. But coming up next, Hurricane Ian blasted through Florida, causing some real devastation. But we're going to keep it in the context of sports. I know it's hard to do sometimes when you're talking about that kind of destruction, that kind of property. But we're going to get to the Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs game at Raymond James Stadium. Where will the NFL play it if it can't be played on Sunday night in Tampa? We'll talk about that next on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, wear your sunglasses at night, because when you do, you're cool. And when you're cool, the sun shines on you 24 hours a day. It's Corey Hart, Canadian singers today, because today was the day we learned that the Montreal Expos would be no more. Back in 2004, they would become the Washington Nationals. So the legendary Expo players of Andre Dawson, Tim Raines, Gary Carter, Rusty Staub. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Bill Gullickson.
No, that name's made up.
Yeah, no. I remember he had a baseball card. I think he pitched a no-hitter, I think. I'm not sure. Who else? Pedro Martinez was an Expo.
Yep.
Pete Rose had a cup of coffee with the Expos. Who else was a Montreal Expo back in the day? Gary Carter, did I mention
him?
Yeah,
you mentioned Gary Carter.
Oh, my God. See, listen to me. I don't even know what I'm saying. See, if I have to go back to Gary Carter twice, I don't know what else. I don't know who else to go to. Tim Wallach?
No, that was a good one. I remember him.
I'm now looking at a list now, real quick. Vladimir Guerrero. Not Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
How do we forget Vlad?
How can we forget Vladimir Guerrero? The Expos had a do you remember the 94 strike? The Expos had like the best record in the National League, I think, at that time. They were a legitimate World Series championship team before they stopped the season in 1994. So the Expos would move. I don't think baseball would ever go back to Montreal. They played in kind of an awful stadium.
But, yeah, I mean, there's always been rumors. Larry Walker, that's another one.
Larry Walker. Yeah. Larry Walker. That's right. So,
but I mean, yeah, I've heard, you know, they've hinted at it, but I think they would choose other cities first.
Oh, I always wondered what it's like for a ball player when you play for the Toronto Blue Jays or the Toronto Raptors or a Canadian hockey team or whatever. If you're an American and you go and you have to go there and play, do you like it? Do you like being in another country, playing in another country, the tax system, everything like that? Or do you go, oh no, I don't really enjoy it.
Did any of them stay?
Yeah, no, true. Did everybody become citizens of Montreal? And then because they speak French there, did you have to learn it a little bit? I mean, so nevertheless, the Expos announced.
I mean, and honestly, we could say that there aren't any teams in Canada because Toronto basically is an American city.
Yeah, sure. We've kind of grabbed it and pulled it in.
We ever went to war with Canada, that's probably the one thing we'd grab. It's just like, no, we just want Toronto, nothing else.
That's all we want. We just want to take Toronto. You can have Winnipeg.
Yep.
Take Edmonton, that's fine.
You can have Ottawa.
Vancouver's beautiful, but you can keep it. But we just want this.
Because we got Seattle.
So we're fine. And so we'll take that. So Hurricane Ian made a landfall yesterday. A lot of times we get storms where the weather guys go, all right, big pressure coming up here. This is going to come in. It's going to blast through. It's going to be a category 5, a category 4 when it reaches landfall. This is going to be a megastorm. And then sometimes it gets a landfall and it just dies and it's not as big of a deal. And people go, what was the big deal? This was not that. This was everything people said it was going to be. Everyone who made the prediction that this was going to be on a catastrophic level ended up being right. Fort Myers is pretty much underwater. Naples got blasted. There's 2 million people without power up and down that west coast. It's now moved its way inland. It's going to bury Orlando with water. It's going to crush Orlando with water. It's going to be moving up to Daytona, and then it's going to swing out to the ocean, and then it's going to come back in, nail Jacksonville, and then move up the Georgia coast into South Carolina, and that's where it's headed. Made landfall yesterday. By the way, we talk about coaches, you need to save people from themselves. Yeah, players from themselves, because players want to play. They'll tell you, oh, no, coach, just wrap it up. I want to get out there. And you're like, no, you have a high ankle sprain. You're done.
I'm kind of dealing with that right now.
Right. Brandon Staley should have never kept Justin Herbert in the game in a 38-10 defeat by Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Never. That's the big conversation is, was that a mistake? And it was a mistake. Your quarterback's hurt, and you're losing by 28 points. Get him out of the game. Okay, get him out of the game.
And don't play him this weekend.
Especially when you lose Slater on the offensive line and you don't have his blind side protected. So, nevertheless, here's Hurricane Ian. And I want to say that I think we need to have somebody step in for Jim Cantore because yesterday he tried to show – I think he's trying to up himself every time with these things, with these storms. That's one of the problems, right, is that – when you have when you're David Blaine, right? Remember David Blaine? He's not the magician. He's more of an endurance artist now, right? David Blaine goes, I'm going to be in a tomb of ice for a period of time. People go, oh, look at that. He goes, now I'm going to be suspended in a box over the river in London. You go, oh, eventually it's going to be like, I'm going to try to walk in outer space with no oxygen. They're like, what? Like, it's just going to get to a point where he dies, right? Because he's going to try to push the limit, trying to top the next thing. Is that what Jim Cantore is doing? Because yesterday he was in the middle of the hurricane, standing out in a street, getting blown over. Like he was literally going down the street and trying to do a report when the only thing you could think about was, is he going to get killed? There was debris flying around him, and he was standing in the middle of the street, and eventually he had to go to a street sign, hang on to the street sign while he was trying to give you an update. Could somebody please protect this man from himself? Because he's going to die if he keeps doing this. It was insane. He went into a parking garage and the wind decided, screw it, we'll follow you in there too. And he went in there and he wasn't even safe. God bless him, but somebody please tell him we don't need you doing this every single time for every natural disaster. We'll talk more NFL next.
so you mean, mean pride.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, welcome back. We're doing Canadian singers. This is the day the Montreal Expos was announced that they would be moving to Washington. This is Rush. What a great band. I saw this band twice. I had a friend of mine who loved Rush, and we went to two concerts, one in Worcester and one in Portland, Maine. So I loved Rush back in the day. Man. But Michael in Atlanta pointed out that Tom Brady was drafted by the Expos.
And, was he?
Yes, and they gave us the Montreal Expos Tom Brady put together card, baseball card.
So, I mean, did they ever retire his number?
Yeah, right. Did they? He was the
is there 12 retired in Expo lore?
He was taken in like the 18th round in 95.
Well,
he
missed out on a golden opportunity.
I know, right?
God.
Right? And it was funny that I had to look this up just kind of see where he was. And some executive said, I think he would have been the greatest catcher of all time. Of course, because he's the greatest football player. Yeah. Like, it's easy to do that now.
I don't think he would have been a good catcher.
No.
He's always been a person throwing.
Yeah, don't pretend like just because he's winning Super Bowls, he would have been better than, you know, the greatest catch. Like, he would have been Johnny Bench, for crying out. What's wrong with you? Like, stop doing that.
You know what? Sorry, whoever wrote that. The Expos already had the greatest catcher of all time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Gary Carter. Yeah. Like, stop it. That's silly. Like, he's Mike Piazza because he's winning Super Bowls. Like, Danny Ainge played for the Toronto Blue Jays, all right? Like, you know, baseball is a hard sport. Like, it's very, very difficult. And just because you're good at football doesn't mean you're good at baseball. You know, I mean, Bo Jackson was good at baseball. Deion Sanders played pretty good baseball. But that's about, you know, let's not pretend that just because they just translate into two. You know, he had a good work ethic, and I'm sure he would have busted his tail to be the best catcher ever. But, you know, you never know. You know, maybe he would have been awesome. Who knows? But. Yeah, so that's it. We're doing the Expos today. So back to the Hurricane Ian. So just keeping it in the sports context. So that area of Florida, Tampa and St. Pete wasn't as bad as Fort Myers, Naples, but it still is bad. They got a lot of rain. Power's out, everything like that. Emergency services are shut down for a bit until they get them back up and running again. And so the Buccaneers are scheduled to play the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. Now, we still have a couple of days left as the storm is now pushing itself out to sort of assess the damage, assess the situation. Maybe people are coming back a bit. So the NFL is waiting to make a decision on whether or not they want to play this game at Raymond James Stadium. Now, if they don't, they've decided to play the game in Minnesota. At U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. So that's where the two teams will be heading to play that game. It's a rematch of Super Bowl 55. So they will be playing it in Minnesota. Now, if you're the NFL, there's a couple of things why you want to wait. So you want to make sure that it's safe for people who want to attend the game. So everybody's got tickets. And, you know, if you are, you might have even found a way to buy this game individually, right? So there's going to have to be a bunch of refunds for the tickets because, again, it's going to be in Minnesota and people aren't going to be able to get to Minnesota. And the Buccaneers are going to have to go. There's a lot of legwork that's going to have to happen if this game is moved. So you're going to try not to move it. But in these kind of situations, you want to be able to say to the fan base that we have checked with everybody within the city and it is okay to come to the stadium. Like you are safe to come to the stadium. The roads are open. There may be some things that are damaged. There may be some, the city still may need to recover in a lot of different ways. But if you have a car, you can drive, you can attend. Right? Because in the end, it isn't even so much a revenue thing. It's just a lot of logistics that have to happen with that. But if there is a situation where fans can't get to the game, they don't want to play it there if people can't go. They would rather be like, look, if it's unsafe for the fans to get there, it's going to be unsafe for the players to get there. You know, who live it, like just get everybody out of that area. Go to Minnesota. The Chiefs wouldn't be flying in until Saturday, so they're still in Kansas City. We'll just let them know to divert everything to Minnesota. We'll play it there. That's where they're at right now, right? They did this with the New Orleans Saints and the Green Bay Packers. The Hurricane Ida was coming up. This was a year ago. Hurricane Ida was coming up, and they said, we're playing this game in Jacksonville. Move the game to Jacksonville. It's unsafe for people to go in and go to the Superdome to attend that game. So that might actually take place coming up this weekend. So that's the NFL plan. But I was riveted by this hurricane all day yesterday. Because my in-laws are in St. Pete. They stuck it out. I was curious where this was going. But did you see the shark that was swimming? Was that real? Or was that a fake picture?
No, that was real.
There was shark swimming in the street?
Yeah.
That's great.
I know.
That's great. Reminds me of Deep Blue Sea. Remember Deep Blue Sea?
I mean, that's what
happened.
The
shark got into the oil rig thing in the ground and that was in the underwater.
I showed it to my middle son, and the first words that popped out of his mouth were absolutely perfect. Right? He's like, man, you know what? I bet those sharks are living their best life right now.
They are, yeah.
And I'm like, you're probably
new territory,
right.
Walking around. What is
this? I saw another video, which I don't know if this is true or not. But a guy posted a video saying, here's one good thing about Hurricane Ian. And he just showed his street, and popping up out of the drain were all these golf balls.
Yeah, what happened
but
there?
I didn't.
Where did they come from?
I mean, I guess from another nearby golf course or something. But I mean, I didn't think golf balls floated like that.
So the golf balls were in some sort of drainage system, and then they just were able to be released to his yard. Yeah, I saw the golf balls. I was like, how did he get? Like, where did they come from? I guess you're right, a golf course, but maybe it was in a water lake that
water
just
hazard.
Sort of went, and all the golf balls just went. We'll be flushed away. And
but golf balls don't float.
No, and by the way,
because if that's true, I would have a lot more.
Now he would have to be a terrible, like not a very good golfer, not a guy who cares. Golf balls that are submerged in water for a long period of time lose about 25% of their potential efficiency. So he would have to be like a guy that doesn't care. Like I'll just hit these.
It'll be like my grandfather. My grandfather used to collect golf balls, and he had just buckets and buckets full. I don't even know where he got them.
Yeah, he lived across the street from a golf course. He would take walks. He'd just pick them up.
Yeah, well, he got these from the golf course, ones that were just abandoned. I think sometimes he just went fishing for them in the water.
Sure.
And then I think he used those for his own personal range because
yeah,
I know he
did.
Hated paying for balls.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I used to hit golf balls at the local ball field. We had like multiple fields, and I used to hit every morning. And that's all I had was golf balls that I found, and I would go into the woods in my course and find a bunch of them, and I just pick them up, and I collected them, and I had about like 50 of them, and I hit them in a bag, and I'd hit them, and I'd pick them up in the bag, and that was it. Yeah. So the guy's got a bunch of, and they all look nice. They all look like
yeah, they're brand, hey, they're clean.
Brand new.
They're clean.
Ball. So yeah, very good. So I really hope people are safe. I don't know. Yeah. There's a part of me that would think I would just tough it out if I was in that hurricane, but I part of me is like, I don't. The flooding is dangerous. That is scary.
See,
that water is coming up, and you don't know where to go.
I mean, if you have nowhere else to go, or if you're in your 20s, I get it. Right,
yeah.
I get it. But my biggest issue would be is the right now.
That's the problem.
The storm has passed. You can't get out. No one can get in. Power. Who knows how long power is going to be out? I don't think I'd want to live that way.
That's the biggest problem. Is again, it's not dying during the hurricane. It's all the things that happen after the hurricane that could cause you some problems. If you have health issues, and emergency services can't get to you. If there is an accident, if there is serious flooding, and next thing you know, you're heading to the upstairs, and you just can't see, like it was people shooting pictures of their house in Naples where they were on the second floor. And the bottom floor was just completely flooded with water, just coming in like a swimming pool.
I saw one where it was one of those things like, you know, are you living your best life type thing? She's like, if you've never floated in a floating pool in your living room next to your, next to your refrigerator, are you really living?
Oh, very, yeah. That's
true. Just trying to a lot of the videos I was seeing, it was just people trying to make something out of nothing, trying to find that silver lining because they know.
And I'm not trying to exaggerate here, but it is a concern. The water, Florida, if the water is saturating the soil so much that there could be sinkholes.
Yes.
There have been sinkholes in Ocala before. There's been sinkholes all through certain parts of Florida. Like when water, that much water is seeping into the soil, it foundations get ruined. I mean, there's all sorts of problems that this is going to cause. And I think, again, I'm with you. If I had the means to get out, visit a family member or whatever, I would. You don't want to overstay your welcome, so you don't be like, I'm here for a month until my state's back to normal. But at the same time, you'd want to get someplace where you could be out of this thing. I would, you know, because I'm too old swimming in disgusting rainwater.
When we had the big freeze and we were without power for 3 days, you know, I mean, we had no idea that, you know, we knew that the power was going to go out. None of us knew that it was going to be out for that many consecutive days. But had we, you know, knowing what we know now, I would have taken the hour and a half drive over to East Texas on the Texas-Louisiana border because they had power.
Yeah. Yeah, much easier.
Yeah, I would have done it in a heartbeat had I known.
I saw a picture of a bunch of linemen ready to go. I think this is on Twitter. This is kind of viral. This huge picture of a bunch of trucks, electrical trucks, ready to just go hit the power lines and just to try to get that up and moving again. So God bless everybody. They'll be working long, long, long days and hours putting that up. Thursday night football tonight. It's Tua Tagovailoa against Joe Burrow. This is going to be, look at that, huh? When did we see that before? So that's going to be the Dolphins going up against the Cincinnati Bengals. Good one tonight. We'll get more into the NFL as we head into the end of this weekend. And also your thoughts on Aaron Judge. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Where do you sit with this on 61 with the pursuit of 62 now? Where do you sit with it? Are you a person that says, no, baseball made its bed. This is what the 73 is it. What is 61? Nothing to me. Or does it have some value to you? All right. Well, again, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, in honor of the Montreal Expos becoming no more on this date in 2004 when it was announced it would be moving to Washington, we are honoring with our music this morning. It is going to be Canadian artists, Canadian groups. Bare Naked Ladies, they're Canadian?
They're Canadian.
Wow, it's amazing. That's amazing. Wonderful. This is one of the catchiest tunes ever written in the history. It's a wild, wild song.
I mean, is it even a good song?
I don't even think it's a good song. It's just a catchy song.
It's just like, one that when it comes on, you're singing it in your car.
You're just singing it, and it just gets in your head. But it's not. You're right. It's not even like a good song. It's just catchy. I looked it up. Aaron Judge is seventh in the list of home run hitters in terms of single season records. Barry Bonds is obviously number one with 73. Mark McGwire is 70. Then Sammy Sosa at 66. Mark McGwire again in 1999 hit 65. Sosa in 2001 hit 64. Sosa again hit 63 in 1999. That's where Aaron Judge and Roger Maris are, right behind him. So if Judge were to have like a legitimate mark for Judge, because again, with seven games remaining on the regular season, Judge could get to 66. Like, it's a lot of home runs in seven games. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of home runs. But he could get to 66. That would put him third all time. If he gets to 63, 64, it would put him around where Sammy Sosa is, 5 and 6. Now, Bonds, McGwire, Sosa, all of them are part of the steroid scandal. So as I said earlier, it's about perception. It's about how you see this record and you can see how you see this mark. What is very interesting, and we talked about how the Major League Baseball really has cracked down on performance-enhancing drugs, and I give them a lot of credit. I mean, it's a 50-game suspension. I mean, they really are hammering it home. Could be up to a year with multiple offenses. They have no problems doing it to superstars. They don't cover this up. They have done Fernando Tatis. If there was one person, they should have went, ooh, you know what? Let's just let this go. It's Fernando Tatis. He's a young megastar. You have now tainted this guy for nope. They didn't care. They didn't care about Alex Rodriguez. They didn't care. So I looked at it and I went, okay, top 10, just top 10 of guys who hit these home runs. Most of them are Sosa, McGwire, and Babe Ruth, but none of them, outside of Judge, only one player hit a significant amount of home runs since 2010. And that was Giancarlo Stanton, who hit 59 in 2017. When you look at all of these numbers, right? When you look at all of these 50 plus home runs, right? They all happened late 90s, early 2000s, or in Babe Ruth's case, the 1920s, Jimmy Fox in 1932, Hank Greenberg in 1938. But most of them were in this steroid era, right? And I'm not talking about McGuire and Sosa. And I'm not even accusing, but like Luis Gonzalez had 57 in 2001. Alex Rodriguez, who we know because he's been suspended, he had 57 in 2002, right? There's only one outside of Aaron Judge that even had a significant amount. That's Giancarlo Stanton. Everybody else, it's within this window of time that baseball has just sort of said, yeah, about that. Sorry. You know, we weren't paying attention. We didn't think it was a big deal. And you know what? Even if we did, if you gave them truth serum, they'd say, even if we knew it, we didn't really want to ruin the party because it was good for business. So it's really remarkable. I always said this. I always said, because at the time, my son was born in 2001, and I remember I was talking about this on a show in like 2005 or something, and I said, look, what if my son was a baseball fan and he was dying into the numbers? He just loved stats, and he was looking at all the record books. And he said, Dad, what is this? Like, everyone's hitting like 40 home runs, 30 home runs, and then out of nowhere, guys are hitting 60, 62, 65, 66, 70, 73. Tell me what that is about. How would I explain that to him? How would I explain the spike? So again, it is about perception, this mark Aaron Judge had.